It's a funny place to be, stuck in a seemingly mundane world with an inner knowing that the universe is so much more than our mortal minds can comprehend. Yet we all have the capacity to know peace and our oneness with the wholeness of life. And through these interviews, discussions, and reflections, it is my intention to share this possibility. I'm Ryan Kurzak, and this is the Kriya Yoga Podcast. Sri Shamacharan Lahiri, also known as Lahiri Mahasaya by students in the Kriya Yoga tradition. Lahiri Mahasaya was the best example of a householder yogi. And what I mean by that is he was able to demonstrate that it was possible to live a natural life and still attain the highest goals of self-realization. And a natural life is simply one where he was able to be engaged with family duties and responsibilities. He was engaged in the world, able to work in the world while still attending to his meditation practice and his spiritual practices. Now, Lahiri Mahasaya was born September 30th of 1828. He was born in the village of Gurney of the Nadia district in Bengal. It's said that as a young boy, he would often seek out quiet places for meditation and contemplation, and he was also fairly athletic and would often swim in the Ganges River. He came from a family that was devoted to God in the form of Shiva, and they constructed several temples for private and public worship. Now, around 18 years of age, Lahiri Mahasaya was married. However, what's interesting about that is he did not actually begin his family until he had met Babaji, until after he was initiated into the Kriya Yoga practices and began Kriya Yoga. And then he had two sons and three daughters. So here we have an example of someone who, even as a child, was interested in meditation and contemplation, came from a family that was devoted to God. And it was after he began the intensive practices of Kriya Yoga, then his family began. So usually it goes the other way around, where people have family, they have their family responsibilities, they take care of those things. And then after all that's done and their kids are out of the house, then they start focusing on their meditation practices. So he's an excellent example of someone who had the capacity to have a family, live a natural life, and still, throughout all of that drama, because those of you who have families know there is always drama, no matter how perfect it seems to be, was still able to focus on the ideal, the goal, and the realization of developing greater clarity of awareness. Now, Lahiri's name, or at least what he was called by his students, Lahiri Mahasaya, this was a title bestowed upon him, which essentially means Mahasaya, one who is large-minded or one who has cosmic consciousness. And he was given this name because of what he represented and what people experienced within his presence. But again, also back to the fact that he was able to be responsible in family and social matters by day. And at night, he met with truth seekers and individuals interested in learning Kriya Yoga. And he was able to maintain that state of clarity, that state of peace, in the seemingly mundane world, as well as in those moments of what some people would call divine instruction. And as far as work went for Lahiri, he was a clerk in the military engineering department of the government. So essentially, this department supplied materials for the Army's road building projects. So he was a clerk by day. He did not have any job that was out there to change the world or had any profound titles associated with it. It was a job that allowed him to perform his civic responsibilities and to take care of his family. Now, 1861, we've already discussed how Babaji reintroduced Kriya Yoga to the world in 1861, and it began when Lahiri was transferred to Raniket. So this is a forest region in the Nainital district. And it said that one afternoon while wandering in the Drungeri Mountains, that he was hailed by a man who announced, "A saint wants to see you." And following his new guide, Lahiri was led to a cave from which a youthful appearing saint emerged and greeted him with the words, "Shamacharan, you have come." And the saint was Maha Avatar Babaji. Now Lahiri was taken into a cave, and in that cave he was shown simple belongings of a renunciate yogi. There was a water pot, a meditation staff, and other items. It said that at Babaji's touch, Lahiri remembered a previous incarnation, and he remembered all of those items, and he remembered the cave as a place where he engaged in meditation practice. It was then Babaji told Lahiri that the Kriya path was really his own, because it was one of Lahiri's ancestors who was the sage Shandilya. The Shandilya Upanishad is a treatise on advanced yogic procedures, and if you're interested in reading that, a current translation happens to appear in, I believe it's The Science of Self-Realization by Roy Eugene Davis. But it was during this meeting that Babaji taught Kriya Yoga practices to Lahiri, and Lahiri was able to, well, I'm sure it was mutual, but encourage Babaji to relax some of the standards around teaching yogic principles so that they could be more accessible to the world. Instead of having to be a hidden reclusive yogi in the mountains, the idea was to allow people of all walks of life to learn how to practice meditation for self-realization and to clarify their consciousness. I'd like to take a moment to read an excerpt from Autobiography of a Yogi. This is from chapter 34, Materializing a Palace in the Himalayas. "My first meeting with Babaji took place in my 33rd year," Lahiri Mahasaya had said. "In the autumn of 1861, I was stationed in Danapur as a government accountant in the military engineering department. And one morning the office manager summoned me. 'Lahiri,' he said, 'a telegram has just come from our main office. You are to be transferred to Reniket, where an army post is now being established.' With one servant, I set out on the 500-mile trip, traveling by horse and buggy. We arrived in 30 days at the Himalayan site of Reniket. My office duties were not onerous. I was able to spend many hours roaming in the magnificent hills, and a rumor reached me that great saints blessed the region with their presence. I felt a strong desire to see them, and during a ramble one early afternoon, I was astounded to hear a distant voice calling my name. I continued my vigorous upward climb on Drungeri Mountain. A slight uneasiness beset me at the thought that I might not be able to retrace my steps before darkness had descended over the jungle. I finally reached a small clearing whose sides were dotted with caves. On one of the rocky ledges stood a smiling young man, extending his hand in welcome. I noticed with astonishment that except for his copper-colored hair, he bore a remarkable resemblance to myself. Lahiri, you have come," the saint addressed me affectionately in Hindi. "Rest here in this cave. It was I who called you." I entered a neat little grotto which contained several woolen blankets and a few begging bowls. "Lahiri, do you remember that seat?" The yogi pointed to a folded blanket in one corner. "No, sir." Somewhat dazed at the strangeness of my adventure, I added, "I must leave now before nightfall. I have business in the morning at my office." The mysterious saint replied in English, "The office was brought for you, and not you for the office." I was dumbfounded that this forest ascetic should not only speak English, but also paraphrase the words of Christ. I see my telegram took effect. The yogi's remark was incomprehensible to me. I inquired his meaning. I refer to the telegram that summoned you to these isolated parts. It was I who silently suggested to the mind of your superior officer that you be transferred to Renekit. When one feels his unity with mankind, all minds become transmitting stations through which he can work at will, he added gently. Lahiri, surely this cave seems familiar to you. As I maintained a bewildered silence, the saint approached and struck me gently on the forehead. At his magnetic touch, a wondrous current swept through my brain, releasing the sweet seed memories of my previous life. I remember. My voice was half choked with joyous sobs. You are my guru, Babaji, who has belonged to me always. Scenes of the past arise vividly in my mind. Here in this cave, I have spent many years of my last incarnation. As ineffable recollections overwhelmed me, I tearfully embraced my master's feet. For more than 3 decades, I have waited for you here, waited for you to return to me. Babaji's voice rang with celestial love. You slipped away and vanished in the tumultuous waves of the life beyond death. The magic wand of your karma touched you, and you were gone. Though you lost sight of me, never did I lose sight of you. I pursued you over the luminescent astral sea, where the glorious angels sail. Through gloom, storm, upheaval, and light, I followed you, like a mother bird guarding her young. As you lived out your human term of womb life and emerged a babe, my eye was ever on you. When you covered your tiny form in the lotus posture under the Nadia sands in your childhood, I was invisibly present. Patiently, month after month, year after year, I have watched over you, waiting for this perfect day. Now you are with me. Lo, here is your cave, loved of yore. I have kept it ever clean and ready for you. Here is your hallowed asana blanket, where you daily sat to fill your expanding heart with God. Behold there your bowl, from which you often drank the nectar prepared by me. See how I have kept the brass cup brightly polished, that you might drink again therefrom. My own, do you now understand? My guru, what can I say? I murmured brokenly. Where has one ever heard of such deathless love? I gazed long and ecstatically on my eternal treasure, my guru in life and death. And so this is how Lahiri Mahasaya was reintroduced to Maha Avatar Babaji and the Kriya Yoga path. It was said that during the next 2 weeks that Lahiri Mahasaya acquired greater proficiency in meditation and experienced several episodes of transcendent samadhi states or transcendent oneness states. Now, Lahiri observed many interesting things during this time with Babaji. And if you want to get more insights into that, or maybe you already have read it, you can refer to Autobiography of a Yogi. But before leaving Renekit, Lahiri Mahasaya initiated a few disciples into Kriya Yoga practices. So he met with Babaji, he returned to his work post, and he met with and instructed individuals learning or interested in learning Kriya Yoga. Now, it's said that it was characteristic of him to share the process with individuals who came to him with sincere desire for spiritual growth. Sincere desire for spiritual growth. That's often a hard thing to judge. Because many people, as you know, become interested in meditation practices simply because they want to have a better life, calmer mind, healthier body. And that's fine. That is a useful side benefit of meditation. But for Lahiri, he taught individuals who had a sincere desire to know God, the divine, their self, to know what they are. And he worked with and taught people of various traditions and religions. He didn't see any difficulty in Christians praying the way that they were inspired to, Muslims observing their religious regimens. The particular form expression of religion was not what was important. And it is not what is important in the Kriya Yoga path. For example, when it comes to religion, when a Christian talks about heaven or talks about life after death, they are referring to a similar kind of experience that the yogi means when they talk about samadhi or mahasamadhi or the great liberation of consciousness. So even back in 1861 or in the late 1800s, one of the most valuable aspects of Kriya Yoga was that it was not only for a certain kind of religious practice. And that, again, is because the techniques within the Kriya Yoga tradition are procedures that allow one to turn their attention within to explore their relationship to the wholeness of life, their understanding of God, divine realities. It gives one the ability to access inner peace. And all the saints and sages and supposed enlightened masters of all traditions, they all arrive at the same realization. So that overused phrase or saying, all roads lead to Rome, are true in this instance. So Lahiri Mahasaya recognized this from the very beginning. And what he wanted people to do was to live an exemplary life, practice meditation, and find out directly, through direct experience, what was true. So the Christian could find out directly what is this idea of Christ and the Christ consciousness, have a direct experience of that. What is this thing we call samadhi that yogis experience? Well, through the practices, one is able to directly experience that. So it was at this time that Babaji and Lahiri agreed that it was the current era, which is most suitable for a wider dissemination of these teachings, because number one, human consciousness was ready. Number two, it was also something that was sorely needed because the world was so separated and divided because of tribalism between religions and different belief systems. So Lahiri taught his students to live responsibly in the world and to privately attend to their spiritual practices. It's said that swamis and advanced yogis also came to seek out Lahiri to learn from him. And some of those include Swami Sri Yukteswar, Swami Pranabananda, Keshabananda Avadhut, Sri Shastri Mahasaya, Srimat Bhupendranath, Dayal Maharaj, and Ram Gopal. Lahiri was regarded by these great spiritual masters so highly that Swami Trilanga said of him that he had renounced everything for that which Lahiri Mahasaya had been given freely by God. And not only did Lahiri attend to his family duties and also taught Kriya Yoga in the evenings to sincere individuals who wanted to learn, but he also wrote 22 books and commentaries on various scriptures. Now, these were published by his disciples. He didn't actually write anything. He advised some of his disciples to record his comments, and then he approved the final manuscripts before publication. Now, he would not allow any formal organizational efforts to be made for the spread of the Kriya Yoga message. He recommended instead that the teachings be transmitted by qualified disciples to individuals who were sincere on the spiritual path. Now, the important thing to keep in mind, and I think many lose sight of this, is that each teacher speaks to their era and their generation appropriately. It's very easy to fall into the idea that one teacher 100 or 200 or 300 years ago had the right approach, and that is exactly how we should be doing it. But as we know, human consciousness, humanity, grows, changes, evolves. Methods of dissemination are different. Individuals, humans, have different things that they're dealing with. 500 years ago, people were dealing with poverty and disease and death and childbirth, and didn't have much of a life beyond an animal unless you were in some kind of high society or nobility, which was rare. As the years have passed, in this current era, individuals who don't even make very much money live in a better environment than people did 500 years ago, if they manage their resources well. So things change through time within human consciousness. And you can refer to the book Kriya Yoga Vichara. You can refer to the book Kriya Yoga Vichara. In this book, I believe it was in the chapter on gurus and initiation, I go into more detail about this, how Babaji had a particular role to play, has a particular role to play. Lahiri Mahasaya spoke to his generations appropriately. And then Sri Yukteswar, and then Paramahansa Yogananda. What Paramahansa Yogananda had to deal with in the early 1900s when he came to America, he had to teach in the way he taught. And then his students, particularly Roy Eugene Davis, while teaching the same things, had a different presentation style, a different way of sharing the work, because he was speaking to a different world. So ideally, the Kriya Yoga lineage is meant to flow from one student to the next, such that, the student that comes after is in tune with the current era and the needs of the current era. But during Lahiri's time, while at first the restrictions to teaching meditation practices and these procedures to renunciants only, that was eased up. So these practices, which before were not taught to householders or people who were engaged in the world, now they were being taught to people engaged in the world. However, Lahiri still did not want this work turned into an organization. He wanted it to be something private, where an individual learned the processes, learned the practice, went home, did the work internally by themselves, and then lived the most natural life they could. And then whatever peace and clarity was revealed within that private meditation practice, that was allowed to shine forth into their family life, into their work life. That's how consciousness is uplifted and changed. Now, Lahiri streamlined and simplified Kriya Yoga methods for ordinary seekers. And what that means is that he was able to distill the practices that he learned from Maha Avatar Babaji such that they could be effectively practiced by people engaged in the world. So he learned numerous techniques, numerous processes. And that is also why if you have had access to teachers in other branches of this tradition, you may have learned different variations of the practices. What you learned from Roy Eugene Davis or his students might have a slight difference compared to what you had learned from a teacher of the branch of Sri Yukteswar that did not come through Paramahansa Yogananda. Just like there are certain practices that once you become adept at Kriya Yoga, once you are fully sort of attuned to how this all works, it may be that you're meditating one day and you become aware of, conscious of, a variation that helps you go deeper into the work. So there are numerous different kinds of Kriya Yoga techniques, and what Lahiri did was he streamlined it and simplified it for seekers involved in the world, which we all are. There are more complicated practices. But again, always remember that typically the more complicated something is, the less advanced it is. However, once you already have a mastery of the fundamentals of meditation, you can take some of those more complicated procedures and it helps you sit for longer and go deeper into the work. Now, the fundamental techniques that he taught are the basis for regular practice, which can awaken latent forces within the Kriya Yoga practitioner. And this is the means of liberation of consciousness. Now, these are what you learn when you are initiated into Kriya Yoga. Some of the advanced procedures can be found in the book Kriya Yoga Vichara, but as I say in that book, it is important that you master the basics first before trying to apply those procedures. And while I put those techniques in there such that they would be recorded and available, really they're there as reminders for people who have learned those techniques from someone in person. So keep that in mind. Focus on the basics first. And oftentimes that will be plenty for you within your spiritual practice. Now, many of Lahiri Mahasaya's students founded modest ashrams. However, the major emphasis was always on encouraging people to fulfill their roles in society, to fulfill their family obligations, while doing their best to figure out and express what it means to live a God-centered life. Now, Lahiri Mahasaya was the teacher of Shriyukteswar. And Shriyukteswar, as we know, was the teacher of Paramahansa Yogananda. But Paramahansa Yogananda's parents were also students, were also disciples of Lahiri Mahasaya. And so when Paramahansa Yogananda was 1 year old, they took him to Lahiri Mahasaya to be blessed by Lahiri. And while Lahiri was holding the infant on his lap, he said to his parents, Paramahansa Yogananda's parents, that your son will be a great spiritual engine and carry many souls to God. So he had some insight related to Paramahansa Yogananda's path. Now it's said that some unique incarnations of yoga come onto the world scene for a special purpose and leave when their mission is fulfilled. Now that's true for all of us. We're here in this world to fulfill our duties, to play our role in this life. And then when we've done that, we leave the world. We return to spirit. We return to the great oneness, the bornless beyond, whatever you want to call it. So this is true not only for great yogis, but it's true for us as well. So life and death is a natural part of it. But it was in 1893, at a Kumbh Mela. This is when Shriyukteswar encountered Babaji. And Babaji told Shriyukteswar to take a message to Lahiri Mahasaya. And the message was that Lahiri Mahasaya was essentially soon to depart this world. It was 6 months before his transition that Lahiri told his wife about his plans to depart during the month of September 1895. And on the 26th day of that month, which was Mahashtami, the second day of worship of the Divine Mother as Durga, and Durga is one of the many aspects of God's creative energy, a ritual ceremony was being performed at the home of a neighbor. And in this ritual, the most significant moment is at the transition of the phase of the moon as it becomes brighter from the 8th to the 9th day. And at that moment, Lahiri opened his eyes, then closed them, and retired into meditation to make his transition from the body. The following day, after his body had been cremated at the Manikarnika Ghat by the Ganges River, a disciple, Swami Keshavananda, was in his room when a great light filled the space around him. Lahiri Mahasaya appeared in material form, younger and more radiant in appearance. He said to his disciple, "My householder work in this world is done. I do not leave the earth entirely. I shall now spend time with Babaji in the Himalayas and with Babaji in the cosmos. And so that's how Lahiri Mahasaya went out. And it's interesting because I remember one of my, well, probably the last two discussions I had with Roy Davis. One about, I think it was about 5 weeks before he passed. And then I believe I saw him 2 months before that. It was interesting because he would discuss this idea of exploring the infinite, you know, what he would do in meditation. And he never really talked too much about his meditation experiences, and it was often hard to tell whether he was joking or being serious. But at this point in time, he would talk about spending time exploring the infinite. And it's important to remember that while we are a body, or relating to a body, a mind, and a personality, that we are more than the body, the mind, and the personality. And essentially, it is the Kriya Yoga processes, the meditation techniques, the lifestyle guidelines, the recommended qualities such as learning to practice non-attachment, discernment, truthfulness, non-stealing, the things that are talked about in the Yoga Sutras that we all know, that these are meant to give us the perspective to recognize what we truly are beyond this mind, body, and personality, and that we are simply passing through, that this particular world, this particular time, space, circumstance is not our permanent home. It is an experience that we are having. And so this is why when great sages leave the body, ideally, if they have done the inner work, they know that there are so much more. And oftentimes in meditation, we catch glimpses when we feel completely free. And that is one of the reasons why the very simple practice of holding our attention at the crown chakra, at the top of the head, if we could just simply do that, we are able to experience our boundless nature. Just simply hold your awareness there at the crown when you meditate. That's why it's called the thousand-petaled lotus. Now, of course, we use the term, the words thousand-petaled, and that seems like it's finite, but that is to indicate the infinite, essentially. So by holding your awareness at the crown chakra after you've practiced your meditation techniques, it gives you the capacity, the momentary glimpse of what is true, what is real for you. And then you catch a glimpse of your true spiritual freedom. And as the days and months and years go by, that becomes natural, it becomes easy. Just like in the beginning, if you were afraid to learn how to drive a car, well, you have that fear, and then you work through it, you figure out, oh, it's easy to do. And then, again, as the days and months and years go by, learning or being able to drive a car to get from point A to point B is natural. You don't even think about it anymore. It's the same with our meditation process. We are meant to become like Lahiri Mahasaya. We are meant to become like Babaji, Sri Yukteswar, Paramahansa Yogananda, and so on, such that we have their same realizations, such that we can live our life, play our role with peace and clarity, while recognizing that one day that will all pass, and then we move into the next stage of our life, which could be simply exploring the infinite with Babaji, or as Roy Eugene Davis would talk about, roaming in the cosmos, whatever that means. We can figure that out. And then we are at ease with life, knowing that transitions are just simply a natural part of relating to a world where things come and go. But through the practice of Kriya Yoga, through the practice of meditation, as these teachers in the Kriya Yoga lineage have learned, we are able to recognize the eternal part of our nature and abide as that self which is eternal. So this is essentially what the lives of the Kriya Yoga teachers, what they're meant to demonstrate for us, and that if we can learn to embody that, we can experience it as well. And for more information about Lahiri Mahasaya, most certainly read Autobiography of a Yogi. There are numerous stories about Lahiri Mahasaya in Autobiography of a Yogi, and that can serve as greater inspiration for you. So thanks for tuning in, and next we'll be looking into the life of Swami Sri Yukteswar.